Hello and welcome to the Westeros Young Adult Podcast. I am Brad Chandler.
I'm April Chandler.
And we are going to be chatting with you today. So I'm excited about the podcast today because we've got some fun quotes from a book I read a while back that we're going to talk about. But before we get to that, we got to talk about what's on our mind today. So, babe, what is on your mind today?
My mind is blown because I found out today that you share a birthday with Queen Elizabeth.
It's a pleasure. It's a pleasure.
Who's really? 95 years old.
Yep. We're not the same age.
So, congratulations.
Thanks.
On that.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
It's kind of like I'm royalty.
I don't know.
No, it's not.
Makes sense to me somehow.
It's not.
It's not like that.
No, it's not like that.
What's on your mind today, babe?
On my mind today is, well, the day we're recording this is a young adult gathering day, which we would love for any of you young adults to come to. We do it once a month at Westridge. But tonight is that for us, and I'm really excited about it. So it's running through my mind. I just keep thinking about all the things we're doing tonight and what I got to do to get ready, but I'm excited. And so that's what's on my mind today. Oh, and one other thing that's on my mind is
what?
Yesterday.
Yesterday was Brad's birthday.
It was when we were recording this, but by the time you hear it, it will be like a week later. But anyway,
yeah.
One of the things I did was take a bunch of stuff back to a store, some clothes I got. Anyway, but I was able to get a deal on a suit that got me really excited because I love saving money on stuff. So I got a jacket like 2 years ago, and I got it on clearance. It was like $17. But it's like a thick, like good jacket, and it was $17. I still am excited about that. So I tell people all the time, they're like, hey, cool jacket. I'm like, yeah, it was $17. Well, that's the first thing that comes out of my mouth. But yesterday I found a suit for me to wear to weddings or formal occasions or even just to breakfast if I wanted.
Oh, my gosh. Please do that.
But the point is I got it for $43, which I
thought
was a steal of a deal.
Which, that's almost better than the gift of getting a new suit to you, isn't it? Just the fact that you got it for a good deal.
That's right. Even if it fit horribly and was a disgusting color, I would still be excited about the fact that it's $43. And by the way, it does fit, and it's a navy blue suit.
You wouldn't buy it if it was.
You can't really go wrong with navy blue. Anyway, that is what's on my mind.
Well, let's get into this exciting book.
Are you ready? Because I don't know if you're ready,
babe.
Because I was reading these quotes and I was just like, "What?
These are awesome." You're hyping it up.
Okay, so I'm going to tell you about the book. Just a brief little intro to what the book is, and then the plan is I'm going to read these quotes to April because I've read the book and she has not, and so I'm going to read them to her, get her initial reaction and thoughts, and then we're just going to kind of toss it back and forth, talking through it, and then once we've completely just sucked every bit of goodness out of that quote, we're going to move on to the next quote. And we'll do that for a little while, and hopefully it's encouraging to all of us. So the book is called Knowledge of the Holy, and it's by A.W. Tozer. And it's one of those books that you have to, or at least for me, like you have to read and then pause, think about what you just read.
Mm-hmm.
Possibly reread it again just to make sure you understood. He's very much in the vein of like a C.S. Lewis.
He's John Piper.
And John Piper. Like, he's just very heady. He's very thoughtful. He gets into some really big philosophical ideas, theological ideas. But it's really good stuff. So I was using a quote of his for a teaching. And as I was looking that up, I just kept finding all these really good quotes. So I'm like, hey, this would be really good for the Young Adult Podcast. So that is what led us to where we are today, right now. So, babe, are you ready for your first quote?
I'm ready.
Here we go.
I'm ready to react.
Here we go. First quote is this. Any faith that must be supported by the evidence of the senses is not real faith.
That's true.
Yeah. That I agree.
Yeah. I mean, that's pretty simple.
Yeah, it is.
It's kind of something that
it's
we forget, I guess, when we talk about faith. We forget about that.
Yeah. It's sometimes we'll have faith in, if we're talking just kind of a general faith in God, then we'll have a faith that he's doing something or that he's there, but we're looking for evidence, mm-hmm. like some kind of way to sense that this is true. But we don't need that.
Okay, what are the
otherwise
senses?
It isn't faith.
Sight, smell,
mm-hmm.
sound,
mm-hmm.
touch. That's it.
No, you just named four, didn't you?
What's the last
sight,
one?
Sight, sound, smell, touch, and...
What is it?
What is the fifth one?
Taste?
Didn't we already say that?
Sight, sound, smell.
No, we didn't.
Smelled.
Yeah, taste.
Okay, taste.
That's it, yeah.
Okay, so we can't do any of those things with God, but...
Well, no, we can.
I mean, you
could see him do something.
But not literally see him.
Well, yeah. Okay.
You can't literally see him, yes. smell him, touch
I got
him.
You. I'm with you.
So when people say like the words blind faith,
mm-hmm.
it can be really negative. Because if you have like faith in somebody, but there's nothing there that would lead you to believe they will actually maybe do what they say they're going to do or something, and you put blind faith in them. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a negative thing. I have situations in my past. This is a question. It's going to turn into a question.
Oh, okay.
For you. I have situations in my past where I have trusted in God and he has come through for me
mm-hmm.
In very real ways.
Mm-hmm.
And none of that has been connected with any of the senses, but it strengthens my faith.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess my question is, like, we think of blind faith as being bad, something bad, not smart. But when we have faith in God, I think it's not based on nothing.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. I lost the question. I guess there's no question. It's just there's thoughts in there. Like, you don't want to have blind faith in people. But I think what I have in God, even though none of the senses support mm-hmm. it, it's not blind faith.
But it's okay. So it's weird, though, because when we say we don't see God, we don't see him. But we see what he's done all over the place. So we see evidence of him and we see attributes of him kind of all right. over the place. So in that way, we can experience him with our senses and in a bunch of different ways.
No, but not literally, because we're not literally seeing him, which is, I think,
that's what I just said. I said, even though it's not him, it's evidence of him. It's like if you wrote me a note and you left it for me to read, it's like, I didn't see you write it, but I know you did that.
Yeah.
So I didn't see you, but I see evidence of you.
Yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah.
Okay. We got a lot more. So here we go. Okay. The next quote is about faith as well. It says, faith is an organ of knowledge and love is an organ of experience.
Hmm. You're faith. Right. These do have to like sit for a minute.
Yeah, you got to like think on them. Faith is an organ of knowledge and love is an organ of experience. So I agree that the idea of faith is informed by what we know.
Mm-hmm.
What we know to be true, like what we have learned, you know.
Like experienced.
Well, that's the thing. Like love is an organ of experience. So... the basis, though, of faith is knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
It, I imagine, is what he's... This is the only hard thing about just pulling quotes, is we don't know what was said before and after it. But mm-hmm. just taking the quote kind of at face value is the core of faith is knowledge or lack thereof. The core to love is experience, which is what enables you to know things. You know, like love,
mm-hmm.
like if someone loves you or doesn't love you, because words can be very empty when it comes to love.
Yeah.
Like I could say I love you and then I treat you like garbage and then it's like you're a liar.
Mm-hmm.
So the experience is what really enables love to be active and to be validated. And knowledge, it's kind of the same with knowledge, like in relation to faith. That you can have faith and step out and trust God to do something, or even just faith in anything, like knowledge or faith in, I don't know, this chair to hold me up when I sit down.
Yeah.
And then the experience of sitting in it gives me knowledge to know, I don't know, they're very connected. Mm-hmm. Like experience is definitely a part of faith.
This is a hard one to pull apart for me.
You want to move on?
Yeah.
Okay, move on.
I like it, but it's hard.
This one's really good. I think we'll have some stuff to talk on this one, okay? It's unbelief is actually perverted faith, for it puts its faith not in the living God, but in dying men. So what do you think of that one, babe?
That's good.
It is good. But what do you think about it? Do you think it's true? Do you agree?
Yeah, because I mean, I think I've said this forever, heard it said forever. Just, I mean, you have faith in God, or you have faith in that there is no God, mm-hmm. That we're just here by chance. That's faith. It's all faith. So, I guess this is saying,
it's just acknowledging that in kind of a unique way that we all have faith, like you just said.
Mm-hmm.
It's just you're either trusting in, you have faith in God, or you have faith in man. And to say you don't have faith, like I don't believe, is not, I mean, you could say you don't believe in God, and that could be true of you, but it's, you still believe in something, and you still have faith in something. And if it's not God, it has to be men, because, I mean, unless you wanted to say, I have faith in nature. Or I have faith in
science. Yeah, I don't understand why it's...
Or whatever.
I understand it sounds good the way that it's written. Like, mm-hmm. It's the opposite of the living God. You have faith in dying men. But
mm-hmm.
I don't think people who don't believe in God are like, it's because I believe in what men say or man says. Like,
it could be, though, that it's because you have faith in your own understanding above all,
so that,
which is ultimately man, is you. And
that's true.
Because to believe in God and have faith in God is to put God above all,
mm-hmm.
or else he's not God. So you're not putting your faith in God. So just by nature, if we're talking about God, God is above all.
Yeah.
So to not believe in God is to say that you or someone else's knowledge has informed you to believe something else.
Right, which is
is man.
How can a person who dies know ultimate truth? You know, like you're finite and you're mortal. So how can you put your faith in someone who, you know, is mortal, I guess?
I mean, I could see someone arguing because there's nothing else to put your faith in if they don't believe in God. Like,
yeah,
there's nothing else.
Yeah.
Which, again, is still belief. It's a belief that there is nothing else other, like beyond what we see and experience here and now.
Mm-hmm.
There's nothing beyond our own knowledge and ability to comprehend. Like,
and I see Christians kind of thinking in that way of like, kind of like I'm the end all of, not meaning to, but kind of being like, I know this is the ultimate truth, you know, like that way of thinking where we're like, this is the only way, the only truth. And
even in their belief in God and like faith in God.
Yeah. There's no room for error on my part.
Mm-hmm.
I think anybody.
My theology is the theology.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, some of these things will speak to that too. So here's another quote. It's a little longer. So here we go. It says, until we have seen ourselves as God sees us, we are not likely to be much disturbed over conditions around us as long as they do not get so far out of hand as to threaten our comfortable way of life. We have learned to live with unholiness and have come to look upon it as the natural and expected thing.
Yeah. The word comfortable, like mm-hmm. that feels such a, it's, I feel like that's the, in our culture, in mm-hmm. my life, that is the thing, like the Achilles heel of like, we just want to be comfortable, you mm-hmm. know, don't mess with us. Don't make us do things we don't like to do. I don't want to have to call someone back on the phone. I want to text them if I feel like it.
Mm-hmm.
I want to watch what I want to watch at night. I want to eat what I want to eat. You know, I don't want to do anything that's not comfortable.
Yeah. It's why I think a lot of us avoid confrontation. We don't want to have someone disagree with us or have a differing opinion. It's like, well, let me just believe what I believe and you believe what you believe and let's just kind of leave it at that.
Mm-hmm. Let me cancel you so I don't have to hear what you're saying anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. But the beginning of that is until we have seen ourselves as God sees us, we're not likely to be disturbed. So once we start to realize who God has made us to be, is when we start to be not okay with just being comfortable
mm-hmm.
and just trying to protect being comfortable all the time,
mm-hmm.
which I think is really good and challenging too. Because if we are seeing God or seeing us how God sees us, then it does need to be messing with us. Like it should be messing with us. It should be changing how we see ourselves and each other, which should challenge the status quo because all of us are kind of used to things not being the way God originally made them.
For me, this past year, this makes me think of like how just being a white person and oblivious to like social injustices around me, it's much more comfortable to just not, you know, learn about those things or focus on those things because they suck. And they're just so like, they're disturbing and it kind of like ruffles up my world and my life. And it means I have to do something. It's not fun. So it makes me think of that, like when we don't see the people around us the way that God sees them.
Mm-hmm.
It's easy to just ignore things that could be happening and just live in our comfortable way of life
mm-hmm.
and just live with that unholiness happening all around us. I don't know, that's the way I see this based on like what my mind has been working
through.
That's
one way in which you see that. Yeah, that's good. All right, next quote is, "The greatness of God rouses fear within us, but his goodness encourages us to not be afraid of him. To fear and not be afraid, that is the paradox of faith."
Yeah, but there's something about that that makes me feel safe with God because he is so great and like to be feared. But then knowing his goodness and his love and that he is so great that I can rest all my everything in him. It's just, I don't know. Those sentences make me happy.
Well, is it like his greatness and justice, I think, could be part of that greatness and also what we can be afraid of because we know we have done things that are not right. So we're kind of like afraid. Like we're going to be in trouble.
We could be. Yeah. If we're living in sin and.
But we've all sinned. We all know that. Like, even if someone wanted to argue that, I think we all really know that deep down. We have messed up. We have done something wrong in our life, even if it was just one time. You know, you did something. So God's greatness and justice are, it makes sense why we would kind of be fearful of that because he is so far beyond and powerful and going to always do right,
mm-hmm.
whereas we don't always do right. And we can't do anything, but he can. So, yes, afraid of that. But that coexists at the same time, like rests in the same place and in the same, in God just as much as his goodness. which is, I think, so evident in Jesus and the gospel and our salvation now and our being made holy and righteous through what Jesus has done for us and our acceptance of that. So that takes away the fear of what he could do to us with what he now does for us, and allows those things to also hang in unison, or in like hang together.
Yeah.
This fear and not yet not being afraid of him.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm using paradox my hands right now. You can't see. I'm like holding two things, and April's making fun of me, which you can't see either, which is so fun. But anyway, I think it's just cool to remember that and think about that. And I like the word paradox.
You do. Yeah, I don't know. I had a completely like different feeling after reading it.
Well, what did you have?
Well, what I said in the beginning. I mean, I know what it's saying. It's like, it's crazy to have like this paradox, like you said. But it makes me feel
safe.
Safe, yeah.
Yeah.
At the same time.
I like it. All right. To say that God is omniscient is to say he possesses perfect knowledge, and therefore he has no need to learn. But it is more. It is to say that God has never learned and cannot learn.
That's fun to think about.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
That God has never learned and cannot learn.
Yeah.
Which makes sense, because you think about, what does learn mean? It means you're like taking in new knowledge you didn't know before. Mm-hmm. Well, that doesn't exist for God.
Yeah.
He knows all that was, all that is, and all that will be. So what is learning to God? There is none. Have you ever thought this? I think I've felt this way. If I really thought through it, I don't know that I would agree, but I know I've felt this way before, that God is somehow, because I'm still learning about me.
Yeah.
I feel like God is learning about me. Mm-hmm. Like he's learning what I like and don't like, and you know what I have a hard time with, what I don't. And it's like, God knows all that. Like he already knows all that stuff. Yeah. I'm the one discovering it, and he already knows. So there's no, he's not learning me.
Well, even like God made you that way. So you're just uncovering like the parts of like the gift of yourself that he gave you, if that makes sense. Mm-hmm. Like there's this egg and it's full of everything that you are.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just, yeah, you discovering it.
I just like quotes like this because they help you. It sometimes pulls out something that you know, but you didn't think of it that way.
Because we frame everything
the way we frame
the way, yeah, yeah, that our brains and we work, and we forget sometimes God is, he's not constrained to all those things like we are.
Well, and even just the way we frame things is different than another person frames things. Mm-hmm. And the way that other person frames things can help you understand God better, which is why we need each other in general. Like, we all help each other see God better when we're focused on him together.
Yeah.
So,
thanks,
to me,
Tozer.
That's what, yeah, a lot of these quotes are doing is that kind of thing. All right. So the next is, so were every man on earth to become atheist, it could not affect God in any way. He is what he is in himself without regard to any other. To believe in him adds nothing to his perfections. To doubt him takes nothing away. Almighty God, just because he is mighty, needs no support.
Yeah. To me, that's kind of obvious.
Though. It is obvious, but when you write it out like this, like, and think it through.
Yeah.
There's, because sometimes we get offended when people say they're atheist or they don't believe in God. Uh-huh. Like, that somehow hurts God. God is not hurt.
We have to defend him and, yeah.
He is.
It doesn't change the truth. Sorry.
No. Well, it doesn't change the truth, but it's not like we need to come defend God's honor, or because God doesn't need anyone to believe in him. Which,
true.
That's, even that kind of can hurt a little bit, even like a Christian, to hear God doesn't need you to believe in him. Because we kind of want to believe that he does.
That doesn't feel that way
That doesn't
me.
Feel that way to
no.
you? It's like, not that he needs me to believe in him to exist or anything. I know he doesn't need me to believe in him to exist or to be God, but there to remember that he just doesn't need anything from me.
Mm.
He doesn't need anything from me at all.
Yeah.
That doesn't mean he doesn't desire me to know him or to experience his love or anything like that, because he does. He says that. But were I to not,
mm-hmm.
he is not affected at all by that. Like, he has not changed at all by that.
Based on how you feel your personal worth is valued.
What?
To people in general. You feel a personal worth based on what you do, maybe? And so if what, like, God is, like, it has nothing to do with whether you agree or like him or anything, to you it feels like, well, I don't know. Is this not making sense?
No, it isn't.
But I'm just trying to figure out why it means more to you than it does to me.
Well, I think, but we all do this as
like
far as...
Like, it almost, like, hurts your feelings that God doesn't need you in any way.
Yeah.
Or need you to believe in him.
Yeah, but we're all like that. Like, you, if there was somebody who was zero affected by what you think, thought, you know, how you felt about them, but they were in your life and they just, you had no bearing on them whatsoever. You, like, if it was a normal person,
mm-hmm.
you would, that'd probably be, like, difficult to feel connected with and loved by them, right? Or no?
I don't think so. I mean, well, I...
No?
Well, just knowing that they love me and the things they do to mm-hmm. show their love is enough for me, I think. That's why I think it just depends on where you're coming from.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. Maybe we're going too deep with this. We took a turn.
It's okay.
I think there's probably other people that feel the way that you do. So.
Well, I think it's cool. I think it's a good... I mean, obviously, it's a good thing. God doesn't need to be affected by us.
Yeah.
He shouldn't be affected by us. He's God. If he was, he wouldn't really be God.
It's a good reminder.
So, yeah, it's the reminder that he doesn't... Yeah,
he doesn't need us.
He is self-existent and perfect mm-hmm. and does not need us in any way. And so for people to not believe in him does not affect who he is or how he operates or his power or anything. Like, nothing is affected by that.
Maybe you like to feel needed.
Well, yeah.
And I don't.
Yeah. I do like to feel needed. That's
true. I'm like a cat.
There you go.
Yep.
There's the deep thought you were looking for right there. Okay, next. God never changes his moods or cools off in his affections or loses his enthusiasm. His mm-hmm. attitude towards sin is now the same as it was when he drove out the sinful man from the eastward garden. And his attitude towards the sinner the same as when he stretched forth his hands and cried, "Come unto me, all ye that labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest."
That's really encouraging, too.
Mm-hmm.
I love the part where he says he doesn't lose his enthusiasm.
Mm-hmm. Well, the sin thing is cool. I mean, both are cool. Just knowing he, like, there's nothing about God right now. And we're going to get to a quote about time in a little while, which is just time.
Fun.
Yeah, it's just so fun. Anyway, there's nothing about his mood in any direction that's different.
Yeah.
Now, as it was at the beginning of creation.
Mm-hmm.
It's just crazy to think about.
Like, we can't do anything to change his affection for us or his enthusiasm about his attitudes towards sin and towards... This is what it's saying.
Well,
the sinner.
Like, you know how we just kind of... we're just like, we'll get to a point where something has just continued to either nag us or be a issue for us or whatever, and at some point, we'll just kind of resolve, well, this is just always going to be an issue. Like, it's just, I'm just going to have to just deal with it, you know, and just suck it up and accept it.
Yeah.
Like, God has not accepted sin. He's mm-hmm. like, no, still no. It was no then, it's no now, not changing. Like, no, you know what I mean? Like, nothing, he's not kind of just okay with being cool with it. Like, mm-hmm. it's just not happening.
And the same way with how he feels about us. We're like, well,
yeah, they keep messing up. They keep screwing up. They keep turning their back on me. But he has not stopped pursuing, and he's not stopped loving, and he has not stopped offering himself and all these things about him to us that we get to enjoy and embrace. And it's all still there. Like nothing.
Doesn't matter what you did. You can always come to him and he'll give us rest.
Yeah. All right. Left to ourselves, we tend immediately to reduce God to manageable terms. We want to get him where we can use him, or at least know where he is when we need him. We want a God we can in some measure control.
Yeah. But we don't really.
No, we do not want to control God really.
We're just trying to put him in like terms that we understand. Mm-hmm. That makes sense. Like when people are hesitant or like resistant to believing in God, it's because they can't put him into manageable terms. Mm-hmm. But also, who wants a God that you can put in manageable terms? Because that means like they're less than you or they're the same as you. Mm-hmm. God is outside of our like, we can't understand him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I feel like I see this all the time. Like, not just in other people, I see it in me, but I mean, it's what you'll hear sometimes if you've grown up in church or seen people talk about just kind of putting God in a box, that idea of putting God in a box, like making him manageable, making him a part of your life, but not giving him all of your life. Mm-hmm. So he doesn't have full access to everything. There's a few things you're like, that's kind of my thing. Well, you're not, he is all powerful, but you are not allowing him to be all powerful in your life. Like you are still trying to keep him in this kind of containment cell, this unit of you have here, you do not have here. And it's like, well, that you are now not really talking about God. Because God has access to all things and he is all powerful and he is, it's not, in some ways, you're not believing fully in God. You're believing in a part of God.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
You're believing in a smaller God.
Mm-hmm.
Who's not real. Like that God does not exist.
Mm-hmm.
The only God that exists is outside of your imagination.
Well, let's not go down too far down this road, because there's another quote that like goes, it's like almost exactly this.
Okay.
So here's the next one. So lofty is our opinion of ourselves that we find it quite easy, not to say enjoyable, to believe that we are necessary to God. But the truth is that God is not greater for our being, nor would he be less if we did not exist. That we do exist is altogether of God's free determination. So that was like a step further than the last quote where we talked about atheist. Mm-hmm. Like if no one believed in God, then it wouldn't affect him at all. It's around the same thought.
Yeah.
But now this is even bigger than that. It's like not even if you believe or not. It's like if you exist or not. Is not determined, him. Like it doesn't determine anything about him, but he completely determines that about you. I love it.
That's cool.
I love it so much.
Yeah, I like that. That's fun to think about also.
Man, just remember, we are not necessary to God. It's just such a humbling thought. Like it is not I think somebody could hear that and feel like that's hurtful or mean, but it's actually
freeing.
It's freeing and it's humbling. It puts us where we need to be. Yeah. Like it reminds us who we really are.
True.
We elevate ourselves to think we're more than we really are. We are not. Like we need to continue to be brought back down to earth. Like,
yeah.
Hey, ease up. I love that quote for that reason. Okay, we've got three more quotes. Here we go. It says, always the most revealing thing about the church is her idea of God. Just as her most significant message is what she says about him or leaves unsaid. For her silence is often more eloquent than her speech.
Ouch. Yeah.
Well, it can be ouch, but it could be good too.
It could be. Her silence is more eloquent than her speech. That could be good?
Yeah.
Huh.
It's just her silence is often more eloquent than her speech.
That's saying her silence says a lot more than what her words say.
Or just says it better. eloquent would not necessarily.
Yeah, that's true.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like it's said more clearly.
How would that be a positive thing? I feel like that's usually that comes around in a negative way.
Yeah, probably more often. But I just think there's instances where you cannot say something and it's still. Like, for example.
Yes, give me an example. That's
I'm,
what go- I mean.
I'm going to. So at our church at Westridge, mm-hmm. we are not going to say anything about how you dress. Like you come in with jeans, you come in with some capris, though I might judge you for wearing capris. We won't say anything about, I'm just kidding. We won't say anything about the way you dress or the way you come physically. That's not the point. There are other churches that have said that in the past or that would say it now. Like say something about that. Make that a thing.
Yeah.
And so our not saying anything about it is saying something about it. It's saying
it doesn't matter.
Yeah, we're saying we don't care about it. We're saying it's not an issue. It's not a big deal. So that's what I mean. Like there's instances and things like that.
I was in a Sunday school a long time ago.
Mm-hmm.
That was here in Georgia. I actually came to visit. I had a pen pal. I used to live in California, had a pen pal in Georgia. My dad actually lived here in Georgia, so I got to meet that pen pal. She took me to her church. In Sunday school that day, the pastor was talking about like a certain type of shoe, and he was talking really down about the shoe, and I literally was about to wear that exact shoe to church that day, and my dad talked me out of it. And it was, I just always remember it because I was like, was my dad right? But it's, I don't think it was necessarily that anybody was right or wrong. It was more just like, why is this an issue? Why are you even talking about this? Why does it matter what shoe I wear to church? Like, what's happening here? So yeah, not mentioning anything about shoes or what people wear.
Well, the reason for that is because it's the bigger issue of the fact that God is not concerned with that either.
Right.
Like God's concerned of the heart. And that's why I like this quote as far as the most important thing the church and us as people say and think is about God. Like that is the most important thing, including what you don't say. Mm-hmm. So I like it.
Okay. One more example.
Okay.
I just was listening to the Annie and Eddie Keep Talking podcast.
Mm-hmm. Plug for another podcast.
Yeah. It's a really good one. Annie is Annie F. Downs, who also has her own podcast called That Sounds Fun. Good podcast.
That does sound fun.
It is fun. Anyway, they had an episode recently where they were talking about just not talking about people's bodies in general. So like when we are looking at, you know, watching a show or looking at a billboard and we mentioned something about somebody's body, like, oh, wow, they lost a lot of weight, or, oh, wow, they gained a lot of weight, or just whatever we say. Why are we even talking about people's bodies? And when we do talk about people's bodies, it's saying something, I don't know, whether positive or negative about what we believe about bodies. So I don't know. That could be another place where it's like it's better just not to talk about things that don't matter. And when we do talk about it, what is it saying that is important? And is that really important to God? So I like that. I know we've only honed in on the last part of that.
Well,
quote,
this all is connected to the next quote, which is,
okay,
it is impossible to keep our moral practices sound and our inward attitudes right while our idea of God is erroneous or inadequate.
Yeah, that's hard. That's hard, man.
Yeah.
We gotta make sure our idea of God is right.
That's why we got to make sure that church and faith and all of these things is about knowing God. It's about a relationship with God. It is not about religion, because religion becomes this list of rules and this, you know, this
club click.
Also. Well, yeah. And like a book of morality and
what we are doing.
It's just about. It's not about who God is, and who God is what dictates everything else. It's what informs everything else. It's what enables us to really know what is true and what is right and what is real. And if that's wrong, which we're always going to have wrong things about that, which is why we continue to pursue God and continue to look to know God. We can't know everything about God. If we did, we'd be God. So it will be a lifelong pursuit, but it's also why it's helpful for us to all be connected to one another so we can help each other grow in that and know those things. But it's ultimately about Him. Like, He is the point. He is the purpose. And our continuing growth in knowing Him in our theology, which is the study of God, so it's the knowing of who God is going to be the continual growth of our own morality and our own attitudes. Like, that will keep getting better in our life the more we keep learning about who God is, because He is the one who establishes all that. Like, He's the baseline for all that, not us. So that's why it's so important to, like, know who He is and not just have these weird thoughts that just, oh, well, that feels good, that feels right, I'll go with that. Or, you know, this fits into the way I need to think about God, so I'm going to go with that. Like, it needs to be who God actually is based off of what He says. And the reason we go off what He says is because He wrote it. So it's got to come from Him. That He's the one who determines who He is, not us. And so if there's error in it, or it's just inadequate, like, we're not thinking big enough, or fill in the word, holy enough, or whatever about Him, then we're going to not process everything else
correctly.
Yeah, right. It's going to skew everything off. So,
this, can I take us on a little rabbit trail based on something you said?
We're going on a rabbit trail. Sure.
You were talking about religion, like, mm-hmm. how it's not about religion, it's about following God, who's a person. Mm-hmm. And it just made me think about, like, for me, I think I do picture myself as Christian and not like God follower, Jesus follower. I see myself like, I go to church. I go to this kind of church only. People who are like my people probably go to a similar church to mine. But I think when we are just focusing on God, we break down all those like walls and like cliques and groups. And so we're more like one people following who God is. So like in the church that I grew up in, we looked at Catholicism as kind of like they're not really Christians. You mm-hmm. know, they're not like us. They're not truly following God. And that is just not true. It's people following God in a different way that more connects to who they are as people. I mean, we can't say that about people. We can't just say like they all are not Christians because they're not doing it our way. You know, like
there are Catholics who can know Jesus, who know Jesus.
So. Definitely are. Yes. And I think that's true with a lot of other like sects of Christianity and mm-hmm. I just love the idea of looking to, like, I'm following just God. Like, I am a God follower, a Jesus follower. That's it. All this other stuff that I do, it's secondary. It's not even necessarily. My focus is following Jesus, and how I do that can change. And I'm not saying don't go to church. I'm just saying let's not be like our identity is wrapped up in those things.
Church isn't the point.
Yeah.
God is the point.
It should be like a tool.
But church is something God established. So it is. This is why we were part of it. This is why we do it. It's something He set up.
Right.
But it's not because it's the point.
It's not like on the list of to-dos like, you know, this is how you follow God. You have to do these things or you're not like God's, you're not following God. I don't know. You're looking at me like you don't agree.
I'm trying to understand what you're saying. You do follow God by being a part of church because God has set up the church and you're meant to be a part of it. So yes, but the point isn't church. Like, we don't want to make church the point.
Yeah.
The Bible isn't even the point. The Bible is, and that, I mean, that can make some people fired up. Like, what do you mean the Bible's not the point? The Bible isn't, God is the point. Like, God wrote the Bible. So we can't make anything that God has established and created the point. The point is God. And the only way to get to God is Jesus. So Jesus is who we follow. Jesus is our, not only, he's so much more than our example. He is our, he's everything. Like, he is the one who made us. He's the one who gives us life. He's the one who reconciles us back into our relationship with God. So what?
Let me say this too. If we don't like wrap up the church in with who, like our view of God, when the church disappoints us, we don't see it as God doing something to hurt us or disappoint us. We have it separated. It's not like it makes it.
Oh yeah. I got
you know
what
I'm
yeah.
saying?
Yeah. What? Yeah, so you're saying like if the church screws something up or messes up, then you take that as God screwed up and messed up, and you kind
of
walk away from both.
A lot of people walk away from God when the church does something, and it's because they weren't following God; they were following the church.
Yeah,
and
that's
not the same.
That's good.
It's not the same thing.
Yeah, good rabbit trail.
Thanks, babe. I have a friend who's Catholic that said something recently to me, like, I hope you don't. I don't know. I know some Christians have a problem with Catholicism, and I hope you don't have a problem with that. And I was like, to be honest, when I was younger, I was taught that, but I've come to realize like it's no different. Like, it's just you guys like more like tradition, like ritualistic type of things. And
I don't know that it's no different. There are some differences in beliefs on some things, but
yeah, but there's different kinds of ways to be a Catholic, just like there are different ways to be a Christian. So,
Hold on. You keep saying Catholic and Christian, like your point was that can be the same thing.
Yeah. But I guess, I don't know. I think Catholics, they do say they're Christian, but I think it makes sense the way I said it too.
But it goes against kind of your point.
Christians.
I know.
Yeah. So I'm not saying they're not, but I'm just saying like,
well, okay, so
what would you call everything else? Like Baptists?
Those are all
non-denominational.
Yeah, those are denominations within a bigger heading.
So I should just say different
religion.
Denominations.
The religion is Christianity. Like, that's the big belief system. And
yeah.
What? There's Catholic and Protestant. We're Protestant, but it's still all within the umbrella of being a Christian. But at the end of the day, being a Christian is following Jesus. Like, mm-hmm. that is what it is to be a Christian, regardless of what other sub thing you put on it, Baptist, Protestant, Catholic,
and
Methodist,
so for
whatever.
Me and that friend, like, she had felt a distance in the past from Protestants, I guess, who said Catholics are not Christian, and mm-hmm. so accused her of not being a Christian. And it sets this like divide between, mm-hmm. and so I'm just saying we're not confined by those divides. Those are just like tools to help us connect to God with other people on like in the same kind of way that we each like to do it. And when we get all about the tools, it doesn't make sense. Like, we got to go back to who God is and
mm-hmm.
not let that divide us from other people. Because, oh my gosh, what a waste of time is that when we have like a world of people to like show God's love to when we're just like squabbling amongst ourselves. That's
Well, that's why the New Testament authors keep encouraging us to love each other. Like, if you can't even love your brother and sister who are other Christians, how in the world are you going to love the world? And how are they going to know you're
a Christian?
Yeah. Following Jesus.
Christ follower.
They'll know we're his disciples by the way we love is what we're told,
and it's,
so.
It says they'll know, by the way, not they're supposed to know we're disciples by the way we love, but it's like literally if you are a disciple, you are loving. So that's how they will know.
And 1 John says it even stronger. If you don't love your brother or sister, then you're a liar as far as knowing God.
Yes.
And loving God.
That's a really good way of saying that. Yeah.
Yeah, the Bible's good at that, right? Saying things. Okay, last quote. Here we go. And this is kind of touching on one of the other quotes that I was saying we would come back to. It says this: when, and this was the quote that kind of was one of my biggest takeaways from this whole book.
Ooh, you saved the best for last.
Was this, yeah. Is when we try to imagine what God is like, we must of necessity use what that which is not God as the raw material for our minds to work on. Hence, whatever we visualize God to be, he is not, for we have constructed our image out of what which he has made, and what he has made is not God. Number one, that was really hard to read. Number two, that is just one of those like, what?
So our kids are often like, what does God look like? Or they say things about what God looks like. Like, yes, he has a beard or he has a mustache. We know this already. And I'm like,
we
don't know this.
He wears a white robe.
Yeah. And what's heaven's, one of the kids said to me the other day, I think heaven's just going to be like all white. And I'm like, no, I don't think so. Because that's boring.
I mean, light, yes. It will be light everywhere.
But it's hard to, and I'm like, how do I explain this to my children?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a lot to work with because yeah, all
but,
I have is
but
what.
But how can any of us explain it to our children or ourselves? Because none of us have been there. None of us really know. Like we have bits and pieces of a description of what heaven's like.
And I'm connecting that to what God is like because it's similar to
it
them.
It is similar. We can know God. But we can't know all of God.
Yeah.
I just think it's mind-blowing. The reason this was my biggest takeaway is because I think we're all tempted. But I know for me, like, I will use exactly what this quote says. Okay, I know when you say, when I say, or when God says, he is good. Well, I automatically associate good with all these things that are just in my brain, my own experiences.
What are good to you?
Yeah. What is good to Brad? Because that I don't know how to think of what is good to, you know, whoever's who you are listening to this or even April. I know how to make that make sense in my own brain. So I use what is good to me. When I hear God is all powerful, well, I think what's powerful. And I start, that's just what I operate from. So this is what he's saying. We're operating off of what we know. And that's kind of the scaffolding in which we use to figure out who God is. And so we just have to be careful. It's not to say that's wrong, because that's just how we have to operate. You can't know what you don't know. So you have to use your own reference points for that. It totally makes sense. But I think the point of this statement and the big takeaway for me was, don't stay there. Like, don't let it just stay at that. Don't be limited by your own understanding, and always realize there's more. Like, that's the big thing. Always know there's more to God than that. Because if it's just that, it isn't God. Like, you're not talking about God anymore. If I only think of goodness in the way I know goodness, and I kind of just leave it at that, and that's what God is, that's not God. He's better than that. Like, he's more good than that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. To put this in kind of a picture form, let's think about a snow globe. So you have the creator of the snow globe. They use their imagination to create what's all inside. And then there's a person. Let's say you're in the snow globe with all the things they've created. And you're like, okay, this is good. This is good. I like these things. These are the things in this little world. This is all I've ever known. And this is how I can describe things. This is my frame of reference. And so, like, someone in that snow globe might picture heaven using only snow. Like, heaven's going to have snow. It's going to have white things. It's going to whatever. But you have the creator outside of the snow globe who's like, I just took a tiny bit of my imagination and created this and put these specific laws around it. You only know this much of me. Because that's all you've experienced. But that creator has a million more ideas and snow globes and like facets to their personality and who they are and like their capability. And we could just never see outside of what we have been given, all of that he's made.
Yeah.
I think that's really cool and exciting.
Yeah.
Again, I brought it back to heaven, but it's the same, like,
yeah,
we don't know.
God gives us enough to know him. Like, he gives us, we can know him based off of his creation. We can know a lot of things about who God is based off of how he made us. We can know a lot about him based off of the word, the words that he gives us through scripture. He's given us all these ways to know him. But again, it's just we don't know all of him. Like yeah. we don't know the fullness of that.
We're not even touching like the outskirts of who he is.
His love is infinite. His power is infinite. His knowledge is infinite. And he's outside of time. Like it's all these things that we are bound by and confined by, he is not. So including our own brain. So it's just I love that because
it makes you want to flip a table, you know?
Is it, for some people and personalities, I could get how maybe that's frustrating.
Yeah.
But at the same time, if you could just, if it was just what you think of God.
If you could wrap your mind around
it. Yeah, if you could really wrap your mind around him, he's not God, you know? And that's not worthy.
It would be disappointing.
That's not worthy of worship. That's not worthy of your life. That's not worthy of of everything. But God is. And so it's whatever. It's just not letting yourself be limited by the scaffolding that you had to use to even understand him.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that that will keep expanding and getting bigger. And even then, it still won't ever be fully known. Yeah. It's just, I just love it. I love it because it helps us capture and remember the grandness and the majesty and the just amazingness of God.
So, I love it too.
And like one of the other quotes said, I mean, everything comes from him. Like all of our life and understanding is going to come from him in a right understanding of him. And so we need to make sure we always keep like that grandness and that hugeness to him. And the fact that we don't have him nailed down, we don't have him figured out. We need to always remember that because that will always help us to never rest, to never get comfortable, to never just get complacent and feel like, you know, we've got this whole knowing God thing figured out. Like we will never have this whole knowing God thing figured out. And we will keep growing and we will keep learning. And if there's ever a point where you're not, it's because you've probably, or if there's ever a point I have, it's probably because I have put him, I've made him too small. I've made him manageable and he is not.
Mm-hmm.
He is not to be managed.
Amen. Anyway. Quit managing God.
Okay, that's enough quotes for today. If you are looking for a book to read, maybe you want to read Knowledge of the Holy, or maybe you feel like you've just read it.
I do.
We've read enough quotes from it. But
that was good, babe.
That's it for today.
Thanks for bringing that. Thanks for bringing the heat.
Thank you, Tozer. A.W. Tozer. And thank you guys for listening. We love you. Hope you have a great week. And we will talk to you next time.
Keep loving each other.
For more information about Westridge Church and our young adult ministry, please go to westridge.com/YA.